Brian Taylor joins us now, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book is Russian Politics, A Very Short Introduction. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, and maybe some context for how long this has been going on, because for a lot of us, you know, we accept these things as, yeah, it is like the Middle East. It's Russia and Ukraine. It's been going on forever and will go on forever. But give me some thoughts on that.
Sure. So I guess I would say it started in 2014 when Russia illegally annexed the Russian region of Crimea and then sponsored a war against the central government in the southeast part of Ukraine. But then it really completely kicked off February 2022 when Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, tried to seize the capital of Kyiv and overthrow the government. They obviously failed to do that. So since those early weeks of the war in 2022, there's been a war raging all along the eastern and southern part of Ukraine and along the border and into, the area around Russia. And, you know, the story is Russia's taking massive losses, probably over 200,000 dead in the last 3.5 years, but still keeps pushing on. And the question is, you know, can Ukraine stay in the fight, and who's going to back their effort to protect themselves?
That's a lot of people dead. To put that in context, compare it maybe to different wars, and also I think in terms of area and damage, if you could make it the equivalent of maybe the United States and Canada, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but how much damage has been done to either country, just so we understand, because it's on the other side of the world to us, right? And we can't pronounce half of the countries, and we have to look it up on Google Maps. You understand what I'm saying, huh, Professor?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of the scale, Ukraine is the second largest country in Europe after Russia itself. Mm-hmm. If you laid Ukraine on top of the United States, the eastern part would be in New York and the western part would be in Chicago, right? So it's, you know, it's a fairly large territory. And in terms of the damage, pretty much all of it is taking place on the territory of Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine has launched some attacks against Russia, but most of the damage is taking place in Ukraine. Russia currently occupies an area that's the equivalent of the size of Switzerland and Austria. So it's, you know, quite a big amount of territory, about 20% of Ukrainian territory. And if people just go online and look at the images of some of these towns and cities in eastern Ukraine, many of them have been leveled to the ground in Russia's effort to, seize them. They're destroying the territories that they're setting out to seize, and they're leveled with artillery and missile fire and that sort of thing. So it's a very brutal war, high numbers of casualties. You know, Russia has taken more casualties in the last 3.5 years than it has in all of the wars the Soviet Union fought between World War II and 2022, or the Soviet Union and then Russia. Mm-hmm. So very deadly war on the Ukrainian side as well. But the Middle East analogy, I guess, holds to a certain extent in that there's no sign of a peace deal anytime soon. Vladimir Putin continues to pursue this war.
So who can outlast whom when it comes to this? And what about casualties on the Ukraine side or deaths?
Yeah, we have less good information on the number of deaths on the Ukrainian side, but it's probably around half of the Russian numbers, I would guess. Yeah, around 100,000. That's just a ballpark number.
But Professor, let me just stop you for 1 second, because I think, you know, that human part of it gets lost in all that. That's 300,000 people dead to accomplish what?
Right.
Not much, right?
Putin has not accomplished his goals, but his ultimate goal is to put Ukraine under Russian control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has stated multiple times that he believes Ukrainians and Russians are one people, that Ukraine is not a real country. He stated that just again a few weeks ago. And he also stated anywhere that a Russian soldier puts his boots, that's now Russian territory. So he has a very expansive view of what Russia is entitled to, which is inconsistent with international law, and he's committing war crimes to try and accomplish these goals.
So who can outlast whom when it comes to this thing?
Well, obviously, Russia's the bigger country. Its population is more than three times bigger than Ukraine's. Obviously, its economy is bigger, its territory is bigger, and it's getting help in various ways from China and Iran and North Korea. But Ukraine has fought very bravely. Russia has not seized a single regional capital in Ukraine that it didn't control prior to the war in 2022, seized and held, I should say. And Ukraine has had the backing of, you know, much of the rest of the world, certainly Europe, North America, parts of Asia. And that has provided Ukraine with the weapons and funding to keep it going, even though no other countries are committing troops to support Ukraine. This financial and military support has basically led the war to be fought to a standstill. And I think Ukraine could still, you know, defeat Russia's attempt to impose its will on Ukraine if the West, including the United States, are willing to continue to support Ukraine's effort to remain free. And I think that's the big question we're facing right now under the Trump administration, who hasn't pursued a single coherent policy over the last, you know, 7 months, but seems to be stepping away from what the U.S. has provided Ukraine in the past.
So the president said he was going to end the war in Russia and Ukraine in the first 24 hours. Then he said he was joking. Now, I don't know what's going on with him and Putin and Zelensky, whose friend is who's what. We'll talk about what serves the United States' best interest, because it seems as though 300,000 people are dead because China and North Korea and Russia are fighting a proxy, well, not Russia, a proxy war, but against the United States and Europe. And meanwhile, it's not the United States people that are dying or the North Korean people that are dying. It's the Russians and the Ukrainians. 620 traffic now, WWL. 624, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book is Russian Politics. Very short introduction. Professor, I don't mean to harbor on or dwell on a 300,000 people, but we just kind of toss that off. Not you, but I'm saying, and that's like three Tiger stadiums here, three Ann Arbor stadiums in Michigan, full of people just dead because of this thing, right?
Yes, that's correct.
It's
crazy. It's two Syracuse cities, right?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Population of Syracuse is about 150,000. So, yeah, it's double that.
So let's talk about President Trump, Zelensky, Putin, his role in this, what the United States can do, should do, what serves our best interest. That's a lot, but jump in where you feel comfortable, because you are the director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs.
I guess the first thing I would address is President Trump's position, which has, you know, been back and forth over the last few months. And many people thought there had maybe been an important change earlier this week when he announced in the Oval Office that he was going to sell a lot of U.S. weapons to Europe that would then pass them on to Ukraine and would keep Ukraine in the fight. It was indicated in some interviews that he had asked President Zelensky about whether Ukraine could actually hit Moscow and St. Petersburg, Russia's two biggest cities. And Zelensky said, if you give us the weapons, we can. But then, you know, since that initial statement, it seems that things are a bit unclear. The Europeans were a bit blindsided by this. I guess no real specific plans were in place. And yesterday, President Trump said, well, actually, they shouldn't, you know, try and attack Moscow. And so I think the question is, you know, which weapons, how many, when will they get there? That's all the details that need to be ironed out. So if we compare where we are now to where we were, you know, it was 5-6 months ago when President Trump and Vice President Vance were, you know, attacking President Zelensky in the Oval Office. We're certainly in a better place now than then. But I'm not convinced yet we've seen an important change in U.S. policy to, you know, back to what it had been the previous 3 years, which was one of, you know, strong support for Ukraine. So I think we still have to wait and see. You know, President Trump talks about getting it done in 2 weeks. This week he said, well, if there isn't a deal in 50 days, we're going to put heavy sanctions on trade with Russia. But I think most people have noticed that when he threatens sanctions, that it doesn't always happen. So we're going to have to wait and see what, you know, which way this goes. And if I can just address the last part of your sure. question, you know, what's in the U.S. interest? My view, you know, since the beginning of the war has been that the U.S. is best served by an international system in which great powers can't, invade and take over the territory of their neighbors, and that there are some rules that states have to live by, and they have to live in their own borders, and that the U.S. is actually getting a pretty good deal, if I can be cynical about it, in terms of a major adversary. Russia has been an adversary for, you know, quite a long time, is seeing its military power degraded and destroyed at the cost of zero American lives. It means defense orders and jobs for Americans. And, you know, I think it's important for European security, which is our biggest trading partner, that Russia be stopped here. So I would like to see a U.S. policy of continuing economic and military support for Ukraine, which is really a very small part of the overall budget. Like, I think it's less than 1% that we've provided every year over the last few years. So it's not like it's a huge dent in our coffers, but it keeps the possibility of a Europe that's secure and peaceful and an economically thriving area, you know, alive.
Yeah, somebody texted in and said no more money to the black hole in Ukraine. But it would seem to me, first of all, a weaker Russia is better for the United States. And secondly, you know, a long time ago, I was kidding around about the Hubble telescope when they had trouble with the professor. And I said, well, that's money down the drain. Somebody texted and said, well, no, that's not true at all. That money was spent in the economy and educated people's children and bought this and bought that and bought the other thing. And the same can be said of the weapons that are being sent to Ukraine. Those are manufactured in the United States?
Yes. And in a lot of cases, we have been sending Ukraine older stocks of weapons and buying new stocks of weapons that create jobs, you know, in business for American defense companies. So, yes, there is money going to this. I mean, the person who texted in is correct that the U.S. has spent over $100 billion supporting Ukraine, but Europe has spent more than that. And I guess the question is, do we think there's some value in helping the second largest country in Europe remain free and not under Russian control? Because I'm pretty convinced that if Russia got its way with Ukraine, that everyone in Europe would be asking for even more American commitments to help defend Europe. And people could say, oh, we can walk away from Europe. They can take care of themselves. And certainly, I think most people believe they could do more. But it also has been an American security interest for the last century that Europe not be dominated by an aggressive authoritarian country. And we fought in two world wars for that principle. We created NATO for that principle. So it's been a longstanding U.S. security interest. And I think, you know, respecting that and continuing that involves spending a little bit of money, you know, a cup of coffee per week per person, something like that, you know, $3-4 to keep Ukraine free and independent. And I would also say that the area that Russia occupies and controls, it's not like the war ends for the people who live there. They're subject to, you know, torture and repression and killings and things like that. So from the Ukrainian point of view, they have no choice but to fight back because, you know, giving into Russia just means more death and destruction for the people who live there.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to Mike Strain. We come back right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen.